Are there any further nominations for acting chairperson? In the absence of any further nominations, I would like to call upon Honorable Osho to serve as chairperson. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, acting chairperson, honorable members, thanks for the opportunity of coming to present the 2013-14 annual report of humanity. I need to just introduce quickly my colleagues, but before I do so, we are expecting a council member, Mrs. Fatima Dada, who is also serving in the executive committee of humanity. I checked with her about 15 minutes ago. She said she's on her way. And Chairperson, with your permission, let me introduce the members of the Humanity Delegation. On my right hand side is what Mr. Jeremy Thomas. Mr. Thomas is the Chief Financial Officer at Humanity. Jeremy Thomas. On my left hand side is what the Chief Operating Officer, Lady Jean Menabe. And on my extreme left, we have Mayor Elizabeth Barros. Lee, as she's popularly known, is a senior manager for qualification, curriculum, and certification. All the qualifications that we have that we manage to go through have processes of quality assurance, including the curriculum attached to the qualification. And she's also in charge of certification. I've already indicated that Ms. Fatima Dada will be joining us. Acting chairperson Ms. Fatima Dada is our driver. She's a member of Humanity Council and also serving with the Greek Department of Council. Chairperson, I appreciate it to Ms. Zewell and Brown. That I've got challenges with my flight, that I had to take a connecting international flight tonight. And to be at the airport in the next day, so I'm feeling that if we go long, I could take a quick with your permission.
I think it will be granted. So long as the college does not give a proper permission.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me get into the presentation. The presentation is going to be focusing on the following areas. Purpose and mandate of humanity is going to be summarized. We are going to look at the external environment and how it impacts on humanity. We are going to be looking at the organizational performance per unit. And we are going to give financial information. We are going to be looking at the current issues and the way forward. And then we will decide what the conclusion. Humanity's mandate chairperson is determined by two acts, namely the National Qualifications Framework Act of 2008 and the Development and Fair Education and Training Quality Assurance Act of 2001. amended in 2008. The two acts support the notion of the independence of democracy to pronounce on quality assurance issues without fear or favor, and not to allow any organization to gag the organization or to model it. In that way, quality is guaranteed, and we be sure that we don't stagnate in terms of quality or we don't regress. And that independence is truly appreciated. And all the bodies that we quality assure are giving us a space to do quality assurance. The mandate, as summarized, is on qualification and standards. We have to, according to the two acts, develop and manage the framework of qualifications in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority. And the two other quality councils supported by the necessary quality assurance policies and processes. The two other quality councils are the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, which is focusing in the main on the qualifications that are obtained in the world of work. And then we've got also another one, which is the Council on Higher Education, which is focusing on university, public and private. Those are the six organizations in the NPO family. We do quality assurance, and we have to develop and implement the necessary quality assurance policies in terms of quality assurance of provision. We do so by accrediting private providers of education and training, and assessment and monitor the public system. We quality assure assessments at exit points, and we also certify learner achievements. We issue certificates to manage once learners have completed their qualifications. We have to maintain a database of learner achievements and related methods and submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Qualifications Authority for recording on the National Learner Record Database. All qualifications obtained through any of the quality councils has to be on the National Learner Record Database. And we must from time to time approve such data for all the learners who qualify through the system. The two acts also allow us to commission and publish research related to the development and implementation of the staff framework of qualification. Now, in terms of the research, we also are allowed by the act to advise any of the two ministers, the Minister of Higher Education and Training and the Minister of Education, on matters related to the General and Federal Education and Training staff framework of qualification. We have to collaborate with the South African Qualifications Authority and the Council on Higher Education and the QCTO, Public Council for Trade and Occupation, in terms of the National Qualifications Framework Act. We have to do continuous advocacy of the staff framework and its qualifications so that the South African public can appreciate the qualifications that Umaruti quality assures. The NPS Act changes in the role and responsibility of various bodies in the quality assurance landscape. It changes those. The subsequent amendments of the various acts that govern the work of the QCs, which has required more capacity and a review of Umaruti's position and approaches. This means that where some responsibility used to belong to the South African Qualifications Authority of standard setting, now those responsibilities have come over to Umaruti. There are differing views and models on the nature of standard setting and quality assurance. Chairperson, allow me to look at the external environment and how it impacts on the work of Umaruti. When you look on the in the external environment, we see that in 2011, this country produced a national development plan which highlights education and training priorities that must be addressed in training. So in whatever we do, we consider the NDP. The process of collaboration with SAPA and with the other QCs in the transition to the NGF Act has meant that SAPA has been extensively involved in both ministerial and SAPA task teams, where we are taking some responsibilities according to the NPS Act of 2008 from SAPA. It meant that we have in a number of task teams between the six organizations and also something that are called by the Honourable Ministers. With the transition of the NQF, we have to regulate through gazetting our sub-framework of qualification. Maruti Metro Gazette is sub-framework of qualification after the minister has finalized the NQF in December 2012. The sub-framework that appears on the NPR. The white paper on post-school education system was finalized at the beginning of this year, and it was launched, as you mean, at Pretoria by the Honourable Minister of Education and Training. This white paper provides a vision for the post-school system, and we have to adjust our work accordingly. So that we take into account what the minister is saying with regards to post-school education, where we also participate as Umaluti. The Department of Education and Training has stated significant changes in terms of the act related to college, but appears to be vacillating in respect of the suite of qualification it wishes to offer. The NCD task team report has been finalized, and certain changes have been proposed, but the debate on the future of the NCD continues. There's uncertainty regarding the location of the N1 to N2 program, and that uncertainty continues. Those are the things that come out of the external environment. The Department of Education is implementing curriculum and assessment policy statement tests, and Umaluti is currently analyzing the changes made to the curriculum and the standards of assessment, as introduced by the curriculum and assessment policy statement. The state of adult learners remains uncertain, and the decision has been taken to extend the senior certificate. This decision may affect training for the rollout of the national senior certificate for adults and after. Also, Umaluti sets and maintains educational standards and assures quality through a combination of processes and interventions. This is about our quality assurance regime. The 2012-2013 quality assurance regime is the following: evaluation and benchmarking of existing qualification and curriculum. This is the intended curriculum. And issuing authentic certificates, development of new qualifications and curriculum. When you look at the curriculum and the qualification, even before you implement, that will represent the intended curriculum. Ensuring good external moderation processes that assessments at this point are of an acceptable standard, and that examinations are conducted in a credible manner through verifying the national and provincial monitoring system. This is the examined curriculum. The intended curriculum, then we've got examined curriculum through our quality assurance processes. We also ensure that standardization processes are reliable, consistent, and that standardization decisions are held during resulting with the examining curriculum. We also do accreditation of private institutions, schools, and schools in adult centers to all qualifications that Umaluti certifies. Now, you appreciate the fact that when we talk institutions, we're talking where curriculum is being implemented, and that is the enacted curriculum. In other words, we've got the intended curriculum, we've got the examined curriculum, and then we've got the enacted curriculum, which is enacted by the teacher in the different institutions. Accredited by the assessment body to offer and assess the qualifications to Umaluti certified and monitoring of public assessment bodies. The honorable members would appreciate the fact that we don't want to quality assure examinations that are written by public institutions. That is the Department of Basic Education, the Department of Higher Education and Training. We also have to accredit private assessment bodies that present themselves to offer the assessment services. Today, we've got three independent assessment bodies. One has full accreditation, and that is the Independent Examination Board, the IEB. The IEB is accredited by Umaluti, and the certificates that the learners get through the IEB system are also issued by Umaluti once the students have passed. We've got another organization that has been provisionally accredited as Humanist, and that is the South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute, SACAI, which will be running out examination for the first time this year. We will be monitoring whether they are mature enough to run full-fledged examination to the point where they can get full accreditation. We've got another new kid on the block, that is Benchmark, which will not be participating like the IED and SACAI on the LST metric. They'll be focusing in the main on adult qualification GCC. So with Benchmark, via registration or accreditation evaluation is still in its infancy, and we'll be able to pronounce one being the graduated to the level of provisional accreditation or full accreditation. Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I want to hand over to the Chief Operating Officer to continue the presentation. Eugene Rabin.
I'm going to now talk to really the work delivered by the various units of the community. And the organization is divided into functional units, in that each unit deals with a part of the mandate, so to speak. Now, the sub-framework of qualifications, which Humanity has been tasked with developing and managing, was developed by the unit entitled the Qualifications Curriculum Certification Unit, QCC. And their main role is to enhance the status and the quality of the qualifications which are going to be certified, and quality assuring those qualifications and the related curricula, which entails benchmarking, comparative study, evaluation of curricula, and so on. This function also oversees the issuing and verification of certificates. Now, the subframe of the qualifications that UMLC currently has is populated by the following qualifications. The senior certificate, which was the previous matriculation qualification. Final exam, for which was now in June of 2014, but for which will now be extended, although that is not part of the report for 2013 financial year. The national senior certificate, the NATED in stream, the national certificate vocational in 2, in 3, and in 4, up Level 2, 3, and 4, and the General Education and Training Certificate for Adults, which is currently under review and will be replaced by a similar but a curriculum-based qualification called the JETCA, the General Education and Training Certificate for Adults. There is also a proposal that Dr. Rakamisi mentioned of a new qualification, but in fact it's no longer a proposal, it's actually registered on the NGS. It is the NSC for Adults. It's the National Senior Certificate, specifically designed for adult learners that are out of school. So that has been registered, and its curriculum is currently being developed by the Department of Higher Education and Training. Now, in terms of what this particular unit achieved during the financial year 2013 and 14, in that time, the General and Further Education Training Qualification sub-framework was published or gazetted. The NASCA was registered on the NQF. And as I said, the curriculum has begun, was supposed to be completed actually, the timeline was in September now. The GEC, the JETCA, has been reviewed and has been out for public comment. Various management policies, these are mainly internal policies really, that govern the work of the framework were developed and approved. A committee of council called the Qualification Standards Committee met as per plan. This particular committee oversees the work of qualifications development and curriculum evaluation on behalf of the council and reports to council on the work. And during this financial year, in about January of this year, the discussions around the extension of the senior certificate began. The relationships have been maintained with the various departments, including SACWA and the other policy councils, and that's quite important in this particular unit because we've got qualifications that kind of knock on the door with all of those various stakeholders one way or another. In terms of the curriculum evaluation and benchmarking, the very, very big project that this unit has been working on now for some time is the evaluation of the CAP curriculum. It is an evaluation of all phases, starting the foundation phase,
going all the way through to the ATP phase, both an evaluation of the subject within those phases horizontally and vertically. There's a longitudinal study plan, a vertical study, which will be looking at the crossover points between phases to see whether in fact one phase is preparing learners for the next phase and what those requirements would be. And that report will become available only next year. The part of it that has been completed so far is the report on the APT phase, and that was quite critical because the first exam based on the CAP for grade 12 is being conducted this year, and so therefore we had to get that research done first. That report is available, and we have provided you with a memory stick. It's a sort of a bracelet, in fact, a branded bracelet, which is with the secretariat, which contains those CAP reports if you're interested. That's it, yeah. We didn't bring the reports this time, but it's just too many. So that project continues and will continue into the next, well, the financial year and the next one. So it's quite a substantial project around the evaluation. This particular evaluation also included looking extensively at hospitality and tourism courses, not only in the CAP, but benchmark them against what was happening in industry and what was happening at ATP colleges. So those programs are all slightly different, or somewhat different, not slightly, significantly different, but it's the same stuff, so to speak. So that study also came out of it. I mean, I'm not going to go into how extensive this is. If you really want to have a discussion with it, the expert is sitting here on my left, and she will be able to fill you in on all of that. In terms of certification, this unit, on an ongoing basis, develops and upgrades our certification system for all the qualifications in 2015. And in the 2013-14, we issued 1.5 million certificates, and we verified 225,000 certificates. The next unit that I'm going to talk about is the quality assurance of assessment unit. And of course, the quality assurance of assessment is around the exit point examination for the qualifications that are on our framework. So the function entails establishing and maintaining and improving standards in quality and assessment at exit points in particular. So that would be your grade 12 examination, your NCV4 examination, your GTC exit point examination, and so on. And the actual functions which Dr. Lachmetti has touched on would be, first of all, external moderation of question papers, and that is about ensuring that the question papers are of the correct standard. Well, actually not correct, of the appropriate standard. The verification of monitoring the conduct of examinations. I must explain here that departments, both the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Basic Education, have extensive monitoring plans, and each province has its own monitoring plan, and Umaruti verifies that. Of course, they have a third layer of intense monitoring, you know, it becomes kind of a little bit an overkill, I think. So we verify their monitoring, and therefore we sample. There's the external moderation of marking, first of all around the marking process itself, but secondly around the standard of the marking. And there's the external moderation of continuous assessment, which is the site-based assessment, the SDA, which is again a sample across provinces generally and across assessing bodies, because they have its own internal moderation process as well, which in fact was quite intense. And then finally the standardization of the assessment results. Now, Umaruti standardizes 11 examinations in any given year, because some of the college exams are run every quarter, and the ABET exams are run twice a year, and then the senior certificate exam. You know, if you add them all up, it amounts to about 11 examinations. We now go to the actual template on this unit's work. It's quite detailed, and I'm not really going to go through all of it. I guess you could just read it, but I'll give you some idea of the work that's been done. In terms of external moderation question papers for the NSC, 355 question papers were externally moderated both for the Department of Basic Education and for IED, for the National Senior Certificate. If you remember that particular qualification, the NSC has about 39 subjects, excluding the languages, of which there are 11 national languages, and quite a handful of foreign languages, you know, French and German and Gujarati, and I mean, there's quite an extensive list. As well as 12 question papers for Sakai, which, as Dr. Rafamesi mentioned, was a South African, what is it? Comprehensive South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute, a bit of a mouthful. They are currently provisionally accredited, and last year, 2020, they conducted a trial exam, and that was part of their preparation for the setting of their first national semester exam in 2014. In terms of adult basic education and training, 86 question papers across the assessment bodies were externally moderated. For the NCD, levels 2 to 4, 260 were externally moderated, and that is for about 90 subjects, just to give you some idea, and 88 for the native question papers. For the senior certificate, which was now phasing out exams, so to speak, 77 question papers were externally moderated. In terms of moderation of marking, which would be on-site moderation, the stats for the various qualifications are there listed in the sheet. What it really amounts to is that Umeluti actually does a sample, and the sample is anywhere between 5 and 10%, depending on how much money we've got, really. That's what it comes down to in the end. If we go to the next sector, to look at internal assessment, that is site-based assessment. Now you'll see there's phases. The NSC is done in three phases, which means that we actually go to the provincial departments at different times of the year, and we look at different tasks being issued at that point for internal assessment, and we then not only moderate the level of the task, but we also moderate the level of the portfolio, to do a sample portfolio to see what kind of variance there is within provinces, although that is probably a function that needs a substantial attention and deepening up on the plan, because it still remains quite variable. In terms of ABET, we did 26 learning areas, 12 learning areas across provincial departments, and 4 for the IED. For the NCB, 32 subjects were sampled across 50 colleges, and for the NATES, 58 subjects. In the verifying the monitoring and conduct of exams, as I said, the departments themselves have very intensive monitoring plans, so we verify those. So in the 2013 examination, for the NEC, we visited 333 sites of about 6,000, so that gives you the idea of the sample. It's not a very big sample, but then given the exact third layer. In ABET, 91 sites, and the NCD, 60 sites out of about 750, and senior certificate, 72 sites. Quality assurance of assessment continues. The monitoring of marking of exams, so this is the marking process, and those are statistics for that, which I'm not going to go into each one. And then finally, the standardization, and of course, this is the standardization of assessment outcomes. Humility is not in the business of determining the past percentage. That's not what we do. We don't know what the past percentage will be. We standardize subject by subject nationally. We don't list out provinces on their own. It is all done together, and the graphs are worked out accordingly. So these are national exams, and therefore they are standardized nationally. As I said, we standardize 11 examinations during the year. The next unit I'm going to talk about is the Evaluation and Accreditation Unit. This is a unit that's tasked with accrediting private provisions, which would be independent schools, private SD colleges, private adult learning centres, and private assessment bodies. So essentially, they evaluate the capacity of education and training providers to implement registered qualifications and approved curriculum. So if we go into a credit school or a college or an adult learning centre, they have to offer our qualification. We're not accrediting them just as a sort of a loose frame. It has to be framed by the qualifications that we get. We look at the quality of the active curriculum in these providers, in other words, the teaching and the learning, and whether that is the required standard. We also look at the capacity of assessment bodies to conduct practical internal and external assessments of learner achievements at the required standards, leading to the certification of the registered qualification. I'd just like to explain two things here. First of all, that there's two processes that providers, kind of two hoops that providers have to jump through. There's first of all the registration of the provider with the state, which is a requirement of the Constitution. So every private provider, whether it's a school, whether it's a college, an adult learning centre, has to be registered with the state. And the state issues them a license to operate. Accreditation is about looking at the quality of that provision. and it's part and parcel of the registration process. So it's two processes that dovetail with one another. A provider will not get full registration unless the is actually commented on their offering. So the two things are quite closely related to one another. The other thing I'd like to explain is that since 2003, Umuruzi has been giving providers provisional accreditation. And the accreditation was provisional because we didn't have a ministerial policy until 2013. In 2013, the minister regulated the policy around the criteria for accreditation of schools. The Department of Higher Education and Training brought out their policy for colleges and adult learning centers. And at that point, we introduced a new accreditation process, which was much more qualitative. The previous provisional accreditation process was very compliance-driven. It was sort of tick-boxy. It was kind of like, do you have all these things? Now we're saying, okay, you said you had all these things, but how well are you doing them? So that's really the difference. Okay. So in 2013, in many ways, we were just preparing those sectors to move up that test, so to speak. Okay. And so there's some stats there. I mean, we've had a huge demand from independent schools. So we've just been flooded with independent schools applying for accreditation. About 500 that were provisionally accredited received full accreditation. About 118 were granted provisional. And then we had about almost 600 new applications, and that happened again this year. So it's quite a intense process, quite a lot. But that also involves appointing permanent evaluators, a whole cadre of permanent evaluators who are subject experts who now visit these schools to see whether, in fact, they're doing what they say they're doing. In terms of FET colleges, it was a similar process, preparing the sector to move into the next phase, into this new accreditation phase. And the same for adult learning centers. In terms of institutional site visits, I think I've already covered that slide because none of the sites were actually visited in the last financial year, simply because we were preparing the system for the new accreditation. And it meant new self-evaluations being done by all the institutions and so on. So there was a lot of capacity building that happened in the system. The site visits rolled out this year, and we've done a substantial amount of that for the new next report in all of these sectors. And then the final slide is around the assessment body. The IEB was monitored for continued accreditation to assess the MSc, and they were granted provisional accreditation to assess the GED subject to an improvement plan. There were a few things we wanted them to improve on, and obviously on a continuous basis monitoring them and so on. So CHI was monitored for continued provisional accreditation to assess the NSC in its pilot exam in 2013 as a state of readiness for 2014. And then, as Dr. Rakamisi had mentioned earlier, there was a new application for the GTC ABEX, which is called Benchmark, and they're in their sort of initial stage of accreditation. The final unit that I'm responsible for is the Statistical Information and Research Unit. And this unit is tasked with conducting research related to the qualifications on the framework, but also informs a lot of community strategy. And in fact, we have a very sort of firm policy that all our work is located and begins here. So if anything new comes into MLC, it always comes via this unit first. The research is done, and then once that project is completed, it's be handed over to the unit that's going to now institutionalize it, so to speak. This slide shows a list of the reports that are available. The first one is a comparative report on the education landscape of countries in the Southern African Association for Educational Assessment. These countries, I can't remember the full list, but it's all the SADC countries. Botswana, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Swaziland, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. And we did a sort of a baseline study of the education system and ours, so that we could see, you know, what are the structures, what kind of curriculum, and so on. Making educational judgments was a report, more of an internal report really, in which we interrogated the veracity and validity of our instruments that we use to evaluate curriculum and assessments and so on. The National Senior Certificate and Matriculation Results Predictor of Academic Success and Higher Education was a small research project, a pilot project to see how we could go about determining the predictive value of the MSc for success in higher education. We did it with two universities, the University of Johannesburg and Wits. It's quite difficult to measure success in higher education using, predicting the MSc, people with an MSc success in higher education, because universities are so very different. And in fact, they don't have common standards. And so what is the indicator of academic success then? And really, that was what we were interrogating in the pilot, so that we can extend it. And I think we've kind of come to something, and we'll be extending this now to quite a lot of the other universities in the next year. Rethinking, and the other reports are all what we call seminar reports. Emergency has an arrangement with the Center for Education Quality Development and Wits University, in which we run a series of educational seminars annually. And then we have reports coming from those seminars. And one of those was Rethinking ABET and Community Education. It was just raising all the issues in ABET and new things that have happened in that sector. The Future of Rural Education, Research and Teaching. A very, very interesting seminar. Towards the Construct for Assessing High-Level Language Ability in the National Certificate Examination. This was a seminar that really linked with our research into the home languages. And it's been very interesting. So at least three reports on home languages and the assessment of home languages, and trying to find a common construct for those papers. So that they're all moving from the same point. Because in looking at the standards of home languages, we found the standards across languages to be quite variable. And that was the research has been around that, trying to strengthen that. And in the final item response series, there's been related research. We do a post-exam analysis every year, which looks at harvesting items from the maths and physical science papers that would be sufficiently discriminating to be able to be used as items in an item bank potentially used in terms of placing anchor items in those papers. So there's been quite a long history of doing that. I think that's the end of my report. I think Mr. Thomas will now take over and turn it over.
Thank you, Mrs. Harvey. Thank you, Chair and honourable members. It is my privilege to continue the presentation, looking at the other half of the organization in terms of corporate services, starting with what we call the governance and the office of the CEO. Please don't mistake the acronym GO-CEO to suggest anything. It is the way the acronym just works out. And this is the unit that ensures that the organization has done its strategic planning, annual performance plans, as well as its budgets, and that corporate governance is run in line with the recommendations of the Clean 3 reports. And Umalusi's work is advocated through the communications and public relations strategy that has been approved by council. And this unit also ensures that we engage with our stakeholders in a professional and meaningful way, so that we could get the best leverage possible. In terms of this unit, we plan our annual planning cycle, which is developed, and as per the requirements of the National Treasury, but believe you me, it is not mere compliance. We really look at the environment and try to see exactly what it is that is affecting our work and how Umalusi could leverage the relationships that we have. Umalusi also ensures that its policies are developed and it's approved by the full council, and the performance of the staff and the organization is monitored on a quarterly basis. In terms of organizational governance that is maintained for our council and all its committees, we ensure that it is supported, and as you are aware, our new council was inducted on the 4th of June this year, and we're grateful for the kind of work that has already gone into the governance part of the services work. The PR and communication strategy is implemented according to the plan as approved by the council, and as I indicated, we ensure that we maintain and forge our political relationships with political structures like the Portfolio Committee, the GPE, DGET, and other secretaries and quality assurance councils. The IT Technology Infrastructure and Systems Unit is one of those units that has become a necessary component of organizational life. And as you can see in terms of the hardware that we've procured for the year, it is quite an expensive unit to run, but needful, I must add. And there is a list of all the equipment that we have. We have 23 servers in total. And I mean, we run from Pastel Accounting to HR Premier to SQL databases, VIP, HR Premier, Visual Studios, the Card Exchange, Acrobat Pro, and there's a host of things that need to be run and managed with an eagle's eye. So there is the list of hardware that we've procured and the software for this past financial year. And the network support is the one area that we really look keenly at, because it's around disaster recovery and ensuring that Umalusi will be able to operate in the face of any unintended event that may occur. And we've implemented a virtual private network through the State Information Technology Agency. That technically means that when our staff go on to leave the offices, they are able to access the files and the computer systems that we have in-house through the laptops that are provided and the 3G cards provided to them. In terms of the management information system, this is a project that seems to be an ongoing operational project. It's one of those animals that keep growing. Once you develop something, we find out that we need something new, but we need to ensure that there's not excessive scope creep. But we need to ensure that we are able to get the reports from the system with the data that we have organizationally. We have a website that is maintained and supported, and we are currently even in the process right now of looking at renewing that website. We have an online accreditation system for private providers, and believe you me, that has been quite a challenge for us, because we're always having to balance what is Umalusi's purpose. And when you weigh up the Umalusi core function against how much you spend on IT systems, whether you keep it in-house, whether you outsource, it's been quite a tussle for us, because one of the things that is critical for us is to ensure that the intellectual property remains within Umalusi as an independent quality assurer to be able to do the work that it does. In terms of finance, human resource development and administrative support, we're very proud to say that Umalusi has had an unqualified audit. This is the history of the organization. We've had a clean audit this year, and it is because of the kind of people we have within our system. It is a complement of all staff doing work within the prescribed legislation and the prescribed policies, and it's not the work of one individual, it's a collective. Our creditors are paid within 30 days, and our surpluses are invested at the Corporation for Public Deposits, and as you can see in the annual report, we had some reserves last year, which has been approved by the National Treasury for us to utilize this financial year. We're looking at internal renovations that have been done, and we purchased the building next door to Umalusi, and so we are now going forward to renovate that building so that Umalusi is able to have and conduct all its business, or as much of its business, on site instead of off site at hotel venues, because we spend quite a bit on that kind of expenses. In terms of human resources management and development, you can read there, we've offered bursaries to about 8 staff. That is full qualifications. We had in-house training. We had four types of in-house training. There were short courses for 33 staff. All 89 staff benefited from what we had. We have a vacancy rate of 12%, and I will hasten to add that the reason for that high rate is the fact that our council, our previous council, had approved the establishment of additional posts to carry out the work that we needed to do over a 2 financial year period. Therefore, we had this large number of vacancies. In terms of our turnover rate, our turnover rate is 6%, as you can see, and we've done a little bit of research, and it seems the government service is standing around 24%, collectively speaking, and all recommendations through the Public Service Commission are that vacancy rate should be about maximum 12%. So when we look at our staff leaving, it is quite clear that we are not having many staff leaving, and most staff, or in fact 99% of the staff who leave, according to your civilian in our annual report as well, they would leave for promotions. They are not leaving because of dissatisfaction with the workers. So we focus on the development of our staff as a priority, and we will continue to do so. In terms of the financial performance for the financial year 2013-14, our revenue collection and realization totaled 121 million rands for certification, verification, and accreditation fees. Now, the certification fee indicated there, our score, came from the private providers whom we collect from, like the IEB, as well as the private TVET colleges. The verification fee that we charge are to employers out there who want the matric certificate of their staff verified with UMALUSA, and most of that is done through employment agencies like MIT, Lexus, Nexus, and the like, who contract with us, and therefore we charge them a fee for the service that we provide. Accreditation fees, the COO has alluded to the deluge of private providers that have come knocking on our doors, and we charge a fee for the work that we need in that regard. With thanks, our grant was received on time, every time, every quarter, and thanks to the Department of Basic Education, and specifically to this portfolio committee, for ensuring that we receive the grant on time to be able to do the work that we need. Interest income and other income was received of 2.8 million, and that was largely because of the additional reserves that we had, which had not been spent because we did not do the renovation of the new building as scheduled. In terms of expenditure, our expenditure was 101 million, and therefore we ended the financial year with a surplus of 19 million rand, 19.6 million. The surplus then, as indicated on page 70 of the annual report, is due to the increased accreditation applications, the private FET collection of fees, the interest income that was received as a result of us not having spent the money on the renovations, and then there was reduced expenditure on salaries based on the fact that posts were approved for filling over 2 financial years. And so therefore most of those posts are currently being filled in the new financial year, 2014-15. In terms of our financial position at the end of March, property and equipment totaled 37.4 million. And our intangible assets, 155,000, and that's mainly for our computer software. Our current assets, trade and other receivables due to us, 4.1 million, and cash and cash equivalents, which were our reserves, our cash on hand, or cash in bank at the end of the financial year, 46 million, total assets valued at 88.5. In terms of UMALUSA equity, and liabilities, we have accumulated surplus and revaluation reserve, which is technically made up of our fixed assets. And our liabilities are for what we need to pay out for trade and other payables, and the detail of that, and provisions, of course, provision for bad debts, provision for leave, and the like. You can read that on page 81 and 85, respectively, of the annual report. In terms of Umalusi's 3-year forecast going forward, I don't know what's happening to this chair, because every time it drops me down. And I need to sit upright, chair, forgive me. It's probably the reserve there. I need to ask you to look at the following slide, chair, if you could just pause.
Yeah.
Because our 2014-15 is the financial year that we are currently in right now, 2014-15. And we have a budget of 134.8 million, and we are going to receive a grant of 107 million. And there was a shortfall for this financial year, but Umalusi has agreed with National Treasury and the department that we would fund that from the Umalusi reserves. And that was 10.8 million that we were going to fund from our reserves. We had indicated to this portfolio committee last year, the same time, that our problems are going to commence from 2015 onwards. Because when you look at the forecasted income that we require for the next 3 years, there's going to be a shortfall of 16.8 million next year, 33.8 the year thereafter, and 42.3 for 2017-18. Now we are fully aware of the National Treasury outlook in terms of 2015 and going forward, and the fact that there is no money. We know what has caused this, we do understand that. But when we look at the quality assurance work that Umalusi does, the question that we as management ask ourselves constantly is, what do we not do if we have to cut our budget, if we have to cut our suit according to the cloth? And so therefore we appeal to the committee and to the department to find, to see if at all possible that 16.8 million can be found somewhere for Umalusi for the year 2015-16. We understand the concept of the CPI increases, but when we look at the work that Umalusi does through inflation on travel, accommodation, on flights, go increase annually way beyond CPI. It's more in the region around 30%, not 5%. And so Umalusi will gradually, over the years going forward, Umalusi will be at a deficit, will be on its back foot. And we need to ensure that we remain fully funded to do the kind of work that we do. If we then look at the percentage grant that we received over the years, you will see that for 2014-15, this financial year, we are receiving 84% of our budget. Next year, 2015-16, the plans are that we're only going to receive 74%. The year thereafter, only 68%. The year thereafter, only 64%. And that's in line with the increased budgets, of course, because things get more and more expensive every year. So we're saying that Umalusi going forward is going to be losing more ground in terms of the quality assurance work that it's going to do. And the question again is, what don't we do? So again, this slide is merely to show the committee, Chair, where we come from and where we believe we need to go to. Where we need to go to, in my opinion, is that Parliament should be ensure that we are funded at least 80% of our budget, so that we can do the work that we need to do to ensure that quality assurance in this country remains at the standard and the level that we are at. In fact, when the COO spoke and indicated in areas we are only monitoring 10% of the sites, we should be monitoring way more than 10% of the sites. But that means we need funding to be able to do that. And so I really appeal that the funding aspect of Umalusi is looked at seriously as we go forward. Thank you, Chairperson. I will now hand over to our CEO.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Chairperson, as we conclude, I'm looking quickly at the current issues and the way forward, and I'll be very brief. First of all, it is our intention to maintain the field audit that we are getting as Umalusi. It is something that we set up in CAD, and something that we are preaching to our staff that the field audit is the way to go. And we say that in all our meetings. One of the things that has to be looked into closely is the implementation of our subframework of qualifications, with new qualifications and implications for those new qualifications on our quality assurance processes, how we go about curriculum development. And in this regard, different interpretations of our mandate. There's still some confusion around our mandate as to who develops curriculum. Who initiates qualifications, who develops curriculum. It is something that we are resolving between the two departments of education. And also, we're looking at the scope of the staff framework with the possibility of expanding qualifications at entry level 5. We're looking at setting standards for the staff framework, and whether we have to continue with the current approach of non-referencing as opposed to criterion referencing with the use of item response theory. What this means, Chairperson, is that with item response theory, criterion reference, the implication is that before the questions could be given to the learner, they must be standardized and you must be sure of the level each question is fished, so that we don't give the learner the question that has not been selected and calibrated to a particular competitive level. As it is, we'll be writing examinations very soon. In some instances, we may find that some questions elicit unintended responses and confusion among the learners. So we are debating that at Umalusi. We are busy rolling out new application processes, as the Mayor Rabi has indicated, the Chief Operating Officer, and we are looking at that very closely because it is a new approach that has recently been approved by the Honourable Minister. As Mr. Thomas has adequately indicated, we're looking at the budget requirements in the years going forward in terms of the grant. I think he's highlighted and clarified that issue adequately. I don't have to deliver the point. Finally, Chair, Humanity Council has approved the hosting of the International Association of Education Assessment Conference for 2016 by Umalusi. This will be in Cape Town, and like we did, it will be in 2016, like we did in 2012, we are going to invite the members of the Portfolio Committee to attend the conference. It's an international conference where we discuss assessment, examination, and all the related issues, including curriculum issues. In conclusion, Acting Chairperson, we wish to thank the Honourable Acting Chairperson and the Substantive Chairperson of this Portfolio Committee, Mayor Nomalumi Rogina, and the members for their ongoing support and advice. The advice that we get out of these interactions we take seriously, and we go back to our offices and implement the inputs of the Honourable Member. Thank you very much, Captain Jacob.
Thank you, I think that it would be appropriate to commend work done by Umalusi. It is actually the same audit because we know that most of the departments have such that I think it would be really that we achieved the good audit, and it has been a long impact with Umalusi on a year-to-year basis.
really putting ourselves in their shoes and understanding where they are coming from as well. And I think there's a lot of work that goes into that from both sides, which sometimes we don't really get a chance to reflect on and to appreciate. So I think here publicly I'd like to thank them. I think secondly, you know, we hear in the press and we hear about global standards and how South Africa's performing in relation to everyone. And sometimes we forget to look at the incremental improvements we're having. I think this year is a very big year for Umalusi and the Department of Education and the country as a whole, where we write our first big NSC matric exam. I think I'm particularly excited about it because I was on the committee that helped design the national, the new national standards, the CAPS, and we look forward to seeing what that does. But I think from Umalusi's perspective and the DOE as well, it's a little bit of a reset moment, which means that it's not without its challenges. And I think we're going to have to work really closely together as we calibrate the results to make sure that we're being fair to past and future students as we reset for the country and you know, to be partners in terms of how we do that. And once again, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to come here and present. We take our work very seriously. The council takes its work very seriously. It's a national duty. I happen to be one of the council members that was reappointed, so I think I have the hindsight of knowing how hard everyone has to work to get done what we need to get done. Thank you.
I did speak to Dr. Rakhmesi before the meeting, but I was very excited to read on Monday in the Eastern Cape papers of the appointment of Professor Madizela as the Vice Chancellor of Rhodes University. Professor Madizela was the chairperson of the Umalusi Council, so his appointment to a prestigious university, prestigious person he is, this week is really, I think, another feather in Umalusi's cap. It is wonderful to be associated with excellence, I must say. It really is. Chair, I have a number of questions. You haven't mentioned any numbers or a number of rounds, etc. I want to ask, and I'm referring sort of broadly to the implementation of the National Senior Certificate. How this aligns with the findings through other assessments, the findings through Tim's Pearls, the findings particularly more recently, in fact, of course, but more recently through the annual national assessment 2013, where 3% of grade 9 learners were considered, if you take 50% as the pass rate, considered numerous. That is astoundingly low. How does that possibly align with an 80% pass rate in grade 12? The two just do not seem to align. And I'm just interested to know how Omolusi explains that, because I certainly cannot share it. I would like to see some more information on the National Senior Certificate for Adults. It's announced in the report with seemingly great excitement, but in the presentation there seem to be some problems. There's some decisions that have been made that will delay the implementation of the NASCAR. So if you could just give some more information on that. I'm also not sure how it would, or haven't been clear how it would be administered. How would somebody actually take up this? Is it distance education? How does it actually work? But really, what are the challenges? English very traditional language was highlighted in the ministerial report on the National Senior Certificate as problematic. It was highlighted as being of too low a level, in fact. And I am interested with your research that you've done into in your report, it says the nature and status of National Senior Certificate English, about the first traditional language, as it is currently taught, whether adequately prepared students, you refer to it in your presentation. Does your research actually tie up with what the ministerial report is showing, and what is the way forward with respect to that? Chair, last year when Professor Mabizela announced his satisfaction with the 2013 matric results, he also announced his dissatisfaction with the fact that that matric markers were not undergoing, in the large part, were not undergoing competency tests. They are still not undergoing those competency tests. Nevertheless, Omolusi, I think it was yesterday, released a media statement saying that they are confident about the appointment of the matric exam markers despite the lack of confidence of competency tests. And I want to know what underpins that confidence. Especially in light of Professor Mabizela's pronouncement last year. I'm expecting you to stop me when you wish you to.
I should start in the terms of how we should approach this, because you have already gone to five expenses.
Yes, no, I realize I'm asking that.
So I would suppose that I'm sure you are mindful of the fact that the CEO has apologized to Little Egg. So as we write, we must allow other members to factor in their questions so that by the time he leaves, he's able to capture them as well. So I would ask you to arrest your case for now and then allow others.
Just a very last quick question. There is concern raised in the Omolusi statement that was put out yesterday, concern raised about the risk factors in the Eastern Cape, which affects the exam in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo. What are those risk factors that you're concerned about? Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. I'll also join you, Chairperson, by congratulating Omolusi, because it takes a lot of things to achieve a clean audit. So we congratulate you for that. But I'm just having two issues to be clarified. Firstly, the readiness. I've been watching you, Doctor, last night, but but I was never clear as to whether the two provinces you're talking about, what is going to happen about them, you see. Yeah. Maybe clarity, much clarity, unlike what I've been watching over the television. I don't know what does it mean. Are we really ready? What is going to happen? We're talking 2 weeks before we start with the examination. Yeah, thank you. But one other thing I want to check. It's independent schools. I don't know how are they being managed. My concern is that we know some of the schools. You also know the schools that they normally do not have teachers that are fully employed. They are changing, but changing teachers, maybe about 4 teachers in 1 year per subject. But you see, but at the end of the year, when you look at that result, it's so marvelous. I don't understand if you are really not having proper teaching or how do they achieve such things. And lastly, I also need clarity on languages. When are we going to have a situation where people are going to say there are now 5 languages that are returning? For now, according to my knowledge, it's only 2 languages that are considered. When are we going to have at least 5? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I think I also wanted to see this congratulations on the timeline. It seems that this animal is correct, does not exist in the case. I've got only 2 questions now. There were 7, but I've got just 2 questions because here for 2 minutes. And my first question is there any different currents between this national certificate for adults and the grade 12 qualification for the national certificate? Then, second question, you know, the national school teachers have long been crying about the issue of certificates of grade 9 level. Do we intend now to do this in the future? So that now, when these kids get into the national school, now, reading and well prepared. Those are my questions. Thank you.
I will also follow through and say you did it. Keep on doing it. Set an example, share the best practices with your colleagues and others. My question is on standardization. I would like to know the council or committee that standardized. Who chose it? The criteria. Where do they come from? How genuine are they? Is there no time that you do sometimes or the department keeps from their idea of standardization? And the second one. Just completing what Mr. Korda has said on this private school, how can we as Umaguchi assist parents that are getting into this danger of registering their children in flight at night? I called it for the private school. 2 weeks back, I saw something in media where the parents were complaining that their child was without an education. patient, how is it protected not to be duplicated if it was once duplicated? We know how clever are the people who are from other countries that are doing the same as for a number. How clever are they? And the other people both of that. And how protected is your certificate and your certificate? For this adult senior certificate, I heard Rabbi say it's being extended. How is it extended? Are you extending that, as you said, up to 2018, that those people can continue to write? My plea is now to humanize. How can we support those people? Because we are speaking about GPT adults, GPT adults. That means it's at this level. What are for those people who want to get jobs, who want to complete their own degrees? How can we assist them? I hear that we have a problem of looking forward to that in the long run. We are going to solve with finances. But now with the current one, we have and we have vacancies. How do you justify? And the trend of your allocation, which was less 84%, which was 64%, it is not because of your understanding that. Because if a man is hungry, it's also speaking to what you get for the next time. Okay, let me call something. I have a problem for this, not certificate as well. How authentic is this certificate of these highly educated people that come to educate our children? Do you have an access to them, to assess them?
Okay, let's observe the example of Honorable Chase.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In fact, I've already covered the two questions we have already asked. Honorable Chair, percentage of total number of staff leaving is too high, 87.5. So why do you have such a big percentage of staff resigning? What are the reasons for resigning? And do you have a staff retention plan? Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I was covered by previous questions. Thank you.
I think, Chair, thank you very much. I'm covered in most of the questions, but I want to check on one. Whether Marius has got any intention of verifying the certificates of all the educators that are in our system. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I hope I want to ask him too much to the Chair. Would it be possible maybe if we can get the list of the independent schools or private schools in public so that we can know those that are registered under money? Secondly, what is it that maybe we can check? what they get to their office to make sure that this is a really tough school, to be able to help the parents when they go to apply for their children, they can check something that only works there. You are registered to avoid the problems that are happening at the end of the year to find that the children have been in a school which is not registered.
Maybe I'll just go in then. I just wanted to check, like, with Uman, if you're dealing with a lot of sensitive information and that, can you share with us how you have perfected the art of information management? How do you deal with the different methods? As it was to the question, and then there's no way in the world where I see your legal views. What is this graduation future? How much are you spending per year on legal matters? And then the last question, the issue of language comprehension. I heard you talking about the NDP and the priority and also in the reporting touch on the issues of equity and is it possible for us to give us a clear view on how you are approaching that and what are the next steps, knowing that a lot of people were previously affected by this issue of language. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tefu. I'm going to respond to the questions of the panel. Just maybe to indicate that Professor Mabide is not the only World Council member who has been promoted to the position of Vice Chancellor. Also, Professor Ben Hoy, who's a former member of Council and who's now currently serving as the Deputy Chair of Council, has been appointed as the Vice Chancellor of Northwest University. So it's Subaru that is producing all the SVC for the country. Chairperson, the question of Honorable Lovemore on the alignment of the 80% that we get in the NSC and the 3% of the ARMA and how the NSC results compare with the teams in the panels. My sense is that the two test different things. The ANA is diagnostic in nature. It diagnoses the whole system. It's not focused on an individual learner's progression in the system from one grade to the other. It is systemic evaluation in nature. So the purposes of the two examinations are different. The two tests are different. And they cannot be having the same outcomes. Mm-hmm. My sense is that with the ANA, what the department is trying to do is to check the weaknesses of the system with a view of interventions and development and improvement and intervention. With the national senior PDA, it is different. It is an exit level quantification that has a different purpose altogether. In terms of the debates with the NAFCA, what we're working on now is the development of the curriculum with the Department of Higher Education and Training. The question that arises is whether there'll be a budget to drive the NASCA. And it is this portfolio committee, together with the portfolio committee on higher education, saying that could actually say to the two departments, there should be an allocation for the NASCA, because the implementation of the NASCA is long overdue in order to support the adult learners. I'll come to the structure of the NASCA later on and what the intention is of the qualification. In terms of the offering, the NASCA will be taken by individuals, you know, who will be studying on their own at their own pace, and when they are ready for the examination, they can just then present themselves for that examination. They can also be supported by FET colleges to prepare them for the NASCA. They can also go through the adult centers for support. the question of the first English first additional language, I'll ask my colleagues to handle. Let me go quickly to the issue of the competence of the matter. True, Professor Mandela made that statement that all markers should be encouraged to write competency tests. Now, the debate here is, what are we looking for? Are we looking at the methods of identifying the competent markers, or do we want the final product, which is a competent marker? So that as to whether you get to a competent marker through test, or whether you look at the key elements of identifying those markers, that is the point. Now, humanity, because of the outcry at the end of last year on the markers, has been monitoring the appointment of markers throughout the country. And we have looked at how the department goes about this. That's why we're able to pronounce the manner that I did yesterday when I commented about this matter in the state of the media session. First of all the prescripts of the PEM, personnel administration measures, have been implemented, and the PEM decides how markers have to be appointed. We look at their qualification, we look at their experience, we look at whether they are teaching grade 12 in that particular year, and we look at their performance in grade 12, what kind of results have they been producing. That's for us, it's another method of identifying competent markers. Now, one problem may decide to make them like competency tests, another one may decide to do something else. So we are not going to speak to them too much. Shepherdson, the risks that we foresee as we visited the provinces, changing the state of readiness with the coming examination relates to the availability of resources. The two provinces in question, you'll recall, they've been under administration. And where a province under administration or any organization is because of the budget, they don't have enough resources. And where the controls that you set up, and therefore the approval take long for resources, for personnel, for everything. So this impact of the examination is that where we observe staff shortage, it is not up to the accounting officer, the HOD, and the MEC to decide that we are going to increase the staff. The administrator has to look at the budget and say, no, this is not available. The ordering of equipment, the approval of the monitoring budget and so forth and so on. So we worried about staffing, we are worried about the resources, equipment that is used for the clinics, we are worried about the material. We are worried about how the districts are resourced. So that's what we are worried about. And where we are concerned, as Umalu, we cannot do anything, suffice to report to the department that these are the weaknesses identified. Please deal with them. And I want to submit that these examinations belong to the Department of Education. These provinces are running them on an agency basis. They are the agent of the National Department of Basic Education. So it is for the department to intervene. On our part, what we do is we intensify our monitoring to ensure that nothing is compromised because of the weaknesses identified. I indicated, Chairperson, in my opening remarks that we are independent and we have to pronounce on these weaknesses once they are identified. Otherwise, should anything happen, anybody can ask as a South African and member citizen, South African citizen, to say, where were you, woman? Why couldn't you forewarn us about these weaknesses? So that is the great work we did. I'm comfortable with what we have done so far as woman. I rest in the comfort of knowing that the department has been alerted, and that the department takes seriously whatever input we take as a quality assurance board. Regarding the independent schools, we've got an accreditation process that we go through, and that accreditation process takes into account the qualification of the educator for that school. It takes into account whether they are registered with state. It takes into account a whole lot of things. Now, we give accreditation on the basis of the data at the point when accreditation is granted. When there are changes, experience for the parent to child, because it takes a time for Umalu to go and monitor whether the status quo still remains at that point. So parent to child, we have had a number of parents shouting that my child did not get this and that, and we usually send officials to just go and check to verify, to check whether that is true or not, and then we are able to determine accordingly where focus. If a child is not taught for 6 months yet, this institution has got accreditation by Umalu. We have to intervene somewhat in terms of the accreditation status that you're giving to the school. As to, there is an honorable member, I can't recall who, but I'll check in my notes, who has asked the question, how do we know as parents whether this institution has been accredited or not? We are preparing certificates for each and every school that has been accredited, so that they can display the certificate that means lots, and the parents can make such a demand. We want to see the certificate of registration by the department and a certificate of accreditation by Umalu. We are busy with that process. With the minister, we recently approved the accreditation policy. We still finalize the certification. All languages, all South African official languages are considered in the national senior system. They've got their own status. You can come with isiNdebele, isiNdebele will be considered. The Sotho, it will be considered as a home language. And just all languages enjoy equal status on the city. In terms of how the NASCAR is packaged, we've got a specialist on qualifications at the corner there, but I'll just give a global view where there are gaps, the colleagues will fill me in. And the NASCAR is designed for adults. It is not a certificate that is designed for children. Because previously we had the children writing the same thing and doing the same thing with the adults, not taking into account the unique needs of the other. So the NASCA is taking into account exactly that. The way the subject has been packaged is different, and we're taking the model from the qualification that was also used in America after the Second World War, where the adults that came from the war came back lacking skills because they've been preoccupied in the Second World War. We're taking the same model. And the model of the NASCA also takes into account recognition of prior learning. The level of a person who has been waiting for 20 years, level of a person who is an African like myself, his proficiency in English would be different from that of a child who has never worked before. So the RPL component is taken into account in the manner in which the NASCA is designed and how people can respond to the competencies that are needed. It will accommodate RPL. Now, the way the subject has been packaged, and you can talk further about that, we don't have history and geography as standalone subjects. We have social science, they're combined. We don't have physical science and biology, or life sciences as separate subjects, standalone subjects, they're combined. The weight of the NASCA will be the same as the weight of the NSC, finally, in terms of access to university education. Chairperson, the discussion between the department and Umalu around the introduction of the GTC for school-going children are underway. The old JC of my time, when I was still young, I did JC. That tells you my age. I'm not a young man. JC, the current generation does not know what we are talking about when we talk about JC. Now, the initial debate, whilst I was still sitting as head of education, among the ministers of education, MECs and the minister and the department way back then, was that we'll be sending a wrong message that a learner has achieved the JC and we may exit the system. When we know in fact that JC does not have any value. You know, even the national senior community, when you leave education with a mistake, the chances of getting easy employment are not big. That debate was resolved way back then by saying you can have the JC and only issue a certificate to learners who have reached the ceiling of their academic career. They can't progress beyond, and only give it to them, and the rest of the others be encouraged to continue. The other issue was the budget constraint. You know, to say the budget will not be able to accommodate. Now, my own submission is that if our budget can accommodate the art, it would be easy for it to accommodate also. Maybe if we could move one ANA examination or one ANA test. Because ANA is huge, it's big. So there were those debates. I'm just highlighting those debates, but we have revisited the whole plan and we are in discussion with the department around this matter. The committee that does standardization is appointed by Umaruke Council. We've got a number of committees of councils. One of them is the Assessment Standards Committee, which is doing standardization. One of them is the Research Forum, which helps us to do research. It is made up of university professors, other research professors. One of the committees that we have is the Accreditation Committee of Council that helps the Umaruke Council with the accreditation of independent schools and assessment bodies. And another committee is the Qualification Standards Committee. All made up of experts who are taken from different fields of our education system. Same with the Assessment Standards Committee. The member comes from the different sectors of our education system, and they are men and women of high caliber, high standing in our education system, who help to analyze the results, and they are highly qualified in statistics, they are highly qualified in education, because when it comes to statistics, we need them for qualitative reports, qualitative to look at the statistics, what has been the trend. When it comes to education, we need them to look at the quality issues, because they are education. So it is true, Chairperson, that we don't always agree with the department. And I'll give you the picture. We don't always agree with the position that I held by that. And that's healthy. Umaruke is a regulator. Umaruke is like an auditor. Auditors and the people that are auditors don't always agree. But let me paint the picture. When the marks are good and they are kept as raw, oh, the department celebrates. When the marks are poor, and because of the reasons provided by the educationist and the statistician, the marks have to be adjusted upwards. Oh, the department celebrates. But when for the very same good reason, the marks are bad, and the assessment standard committee says there are reasons why they are bad, because learners are not properly taught and so on, and they give reasons, then the department of checks. When the marks are high and reasons are provided that they actually are just a downward, there's an objection. And I think it is natural for people to be like that because these are products of their work. You know, I used to be head of education myself. When women have done the mark downward, I used to object. The colleagues know. They know. And now the colleagues in the department remind me that, oh, now we are sitting on Timaru, we are comfortable. Because the agencies are holding the colleagues accountable. If they want the results going down. So let's see that balance in the system of people who literally the system actually to say no, it can't go this way. When people complain about the standards in education and they know that an independent body like Umaruke, who is assessment standards committee, is looking into this, it helps give credibility to the system. Chairperson, I'm going to have to run, I'm leaving there. Raised a few issues that were raised. Whatever guest I retain in the police will cover for music affirmation in Shepherdson. Our certificate has security features, like the watermark. If you hold our certificate against light, you'll see a watermark that cannot be duplicated. The serial number is different. The serial number, the way it is written in red, it goes through the paper and you can see it even from behind the paper. Now, the security features that we have also, if you take a microscope, a magnifying glass, and you put it across the border, it will show Umaruke. An ordinary certificate does not have that. So that even in instances where people have tried to duplicate our certificate, when you look at it, you can see that this is fake. You don't have to go, you can see this is fake. You know, they do this a photocopy somewhere in Hillsborough, and there's a corner shop there. It doesn't work. It will just not work. Jeremy, you'll comment on surplus funds. Foreign qualification, we don't check foreign qualifications, they are checked by the South African Qualifications Authority. And for those people who are highly qualified to come in, before they are given work, staff have to check with their countries of origin whether whether that qualification is authentic or not. That's what happens. And also states have to check the authenticity of all these things before they can grant these people license to operate in our country. You deal with the staff leaving, staff retention, just in the interest of time. All teacher certificates, quality certificates, that. I've already dealt with the certificates for the accredited institution. The colleagues that work at Humanity pride themselves for working at that organization. They are very loyal. That does not mean that we're resting on our laurels and we don't put security and checks and balances in place. Whoever touches our question paper before they are signed or before they are written, signed for it, as an external moderator to say, I was working on this paper on this day, so that we can have a shade of who worked on the paper as an examiner, internal moderator, and when. So we don't, these people don't work on their question paper at home. They can't be. They are closed in and they work there, they are security checked. So we got that shape. And even the colleagues who work in certification, whatever you do on the certification system can be traced back to your pathway. To say this Dragon is worked on this day. It is he who produced the certificate with this symbols. So we got those checks and balances. What we did last year was that we asked our internal auditors who are independent to audit our certification process and system. And they gave us a clean bill of health. And the people who are in certification work with the made this balance as a comment. Second, the final issue that I want to talk about is the issue of research and language compensation. Language compensation was used as a measure to redress the imbalances of the past with the commitment by the department that the imbalances of the past will not be with us forever. That learners will be trained to be proficient in English so that they are able to compete with other learners without fail. So that language compensation does not become a factor any longer. We said to the department over the years, even before my time at Humanities, to say when are we ending language compensation. The goalpost has been shifted from 1 year to the other. Next year, the year before. So it has been an ongoing thing. So much that research has been done by both organizations to say what would be the impact of language compensation if it were to be terminated. The impact is going to be minimal. But in terms of the stigma that these children carry, the stigma is too high. To say, no, you got language compensation. I was at one thing at the University of Cape KwaZulu-Natal where the professors were saying, these learners come with marks that have been inflated. They're inflated through language compensation, they're inflated through condonation, they're inflated through standardization where upward adjustments are done. We agreed with the department 2 years ago that with the former council that language compensation is going to be removed. We announced that to the department in writing at the decision of council. The media covered that at the beginning of this year. There was a rethink whether it is the appropriate time for us to do that. And it was written just about 2 months ago. We said we are going to lose faith. If we are going to reintroduce something like we've already announced, we are going to remove for the reasons that I've advanced. That the impact is low, but the stigma that the children carry is very high. So that since then, the argument between us and the department 2 months ago was that we are going to go on with the language compensation being terminated with this examination. And the expectation is that the impact is not going to be hard. Thank you, Shepard. Can I run Shepard's presentation? Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to share with you. In respect of your question regarding the research around the caps on the languages, the SIR unit has been involved in looking at the African languages. The caps evaluations have looked at the English home language and English FAL in the FET band. We have done work later on, but we will report on that later. What it was very interesting about both teams, the home language and the FAL team, was that both of them felt quite dissatisfied with the CAPS version of the language. The problem with the home language curriculum, and I think we need to see them together, is that it was felt that it was not quite home language enough. So in other words, the kinds of cognitive requirements in terms of thinking and writing, arguing and so on, were not as fully formed as one would have anticipated in a home language curriculum. The English SAL curriculum suffers a slightly different kind of problem, and that is that if one looks at the big picture established in the introductory section of the CAP, it looks very satisfactory. It looks like it would be sufficient to help young people do quite well in the language. But what we have found is, in the close analysis of the CAP, is that the teaching program, the annual teaching program, does not address all the things that are identified as being part of the curriculum. And for that reason, we are concerned that the young people who are working with the EFAL curriculum are not getting the necessary skills that would in fact enable them to use English as the language of learning and teaching, and therefore do as well as they like. But I would like to add that I think this is a cumulative problem. I don't think it's something that is just located in the FET phase. In other words, from the informal research or the informal findings we haven't written up yet, it's quite clear that the problem actually originates much lower down. The other question was around the NASCA, was it? Yeah, I'm just going to say there's a lot that one could say about the NASCA, but I think what we do need to recognize is that the structure of the qualification is quite different from the standard school qualification, in that it's got four big subjects rather than the six or seven that we're used to in a school leaving certificate. Having said that, Dr. Rakamesi mentioned the fact that the subjects are composite subjects. So you will get a combination of life sciences and physical sciences and chemistry. The point about it, and I think this is what people don't understand about the NASCA, is that the issue is not the knowledge or the content that is acquired. It is what is a general education development that is evidenced through the information, the content that the learners have acquired. What we have found encouraging is that higher education in South Africa are in principle not against the notion of a full subject qualification in terms of admission to higher education. So
there's lots more to say, but I think
that's the important thing. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. If I may respond to the financial questions. And to start off, I'd like to speak to the question by Honorable Basson around the surpluses and how do we justify these. We 14 year at the portfolio committee. Today is really in October. The financial year ended in March. By the 31st of May, we have to provide a report to National Treasury as to what are we going to do with the surplus. And through the Department of Basic Education, we then indicate what we're going to do with that money. And once that is approved, we then continue to do with that money what we said we were going to do. So of the 46 million that we had indicated at the end of March, we said first 10.8 million of it we will utilize in this financial year to prop up the budget because there was a shortfall. Okay? So we're going to be taking 10.8. Secondly, there was an accrual of around 10 million rand, 9.something million, that we need to pay our providers for work that was commissioned at the end of March but not paid for yet. So we have to put our money aside for that. Thirdly, we had to renovate the building next door to the tune of about 10 million rand. That pushes it to almost 30 million. And for the rest of the money, we're saying Umalusi and the public entity needs to have some kind of reserve in the event of any possible legal claim that comes against Umalusi or any kind of event that may occur that may require Umalusi to provide some kind of funding. What that additional money also does is it helps us with our cash flow scenario so that in the months where collections are low and the money is insufficient for the expenses for that month, the little bit extra that we have in reserve props up our cash flow. And so that's how we justify the utilization of those reserves. So the money is not readily available for operations. In fact, where there are reserves, technically it should never be used for operations, because operational expenditure just increases year on year. And 10 million we gave now, we won't have the 10 million next year. And so therefore we say we need to ensure that the fiscus provides sufficiency for us. Honorable Mashabela, question around the resignations. And if I may go to that slide, I'd like to indicate that the vacancy rate is 12% and the turnover rate is 6%. And Honorable Mashabela correctly picked up an error in the annual report. Because if you look at the number of staff that had left, there were 5 staff that had left. 5 out of 89 staff makes a turnover rate of 6% and not the percentage indicated in the report. So that is on page 53. And so correctly picked up as Honorable Mashabela, the turnover rate is 6%, not 62.5. It's supposed to be 6.25. So there's an error in print, and thank you for that. Then last but no means least, Honorable Chairperson, your question around legal fees, in terms of page 86 of the annual report, it indicates a list of expenses, and you will see our list of legal fees for the financial year was 413,000, and that was money that we spent on obtaining legal opinions with regards to legislation and the like. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon, Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, there are several comments the DBE delegation could possibly make arising out of the various questions that have been posed by the Honorable Members. However, Chair, what we would like to do is we would like to provide members with an update
regarding one of the challenges that has been uploaded with regard to Eastern Cape and Limpopo, so that you have a sense of what's going on. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, Chair, there are two other issues where as DBE we feel that we would like to give a DBE perspective, which is not necessarily the same as Umarusi. And that relates specifically to the language compensation issue, as well as the issue of the standardization process with the permission of the Chair. Dr. Kolya will address that.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and thank you for this opportunity in terms of allowing us to present a DBE perspective. I think the entire concern around the Eastern Cape and Limpopo needs to be contextualized, lest members leave this meeting with a serious concern about the impact of these resources on the 2014 NSA exams. I think what the chair of, or the CEO of Umarusi was referring to is that there is a general sense of staff capacity shortages as well as resource limitations in these two provinces, which we're all fully aware of. But what I can confidently say is that in terms of the 2014 NSA exams, that the province has prioritized the functions relating to the NSA exams. The DBE has gone to both these provinces together with the other provinces, and we have not identified a serious risk that will compromise this particular exam. For example, I mean, if one looks at the printing of the question papers, if one looks at the packing, the distribution on a daily basis, looking at the marking process, all of these processes are intact and will take place. I think where the resource limitations come in, for example, if one looks at a district, you do not have adequate photocopying facilities. So if there's a shortage of a question paper, districts may not be able to make the copies. But what we've done is that we've ensured that there is access to a photocopying machine on the day of the examination that will allow to make good such shortages that may occur. And also what I want to assure the committee is that DBE as well, together with the Umarusi, will step up its monitoring of both these provinces. We are appointing independent monitors who come from the community and even outside the community, whom we will deploy. And in fact, our intention is to try and make sure that we have across the country a DBE monitor per district that will be able to provide us with information on an ongoing basis regarding the examinations in these two provinces. To move on to standardization, and I think we all realize that standardization is a red herring, and we have this question being raised quite often by the honorable members. And I think from a DBE perspective, our concern lies with the overemphasis, and that's from the perspective of the DBE, on the statistics rather than the qualitative data that is available to assist in the process of standardization. Now, we as a department are doing all we could to improve learner performance. On the other hand, and possibly rightfully so, Umarusi is there to guard and protect the standards of the NSE. But the big question lies in the disjuncture that sometimes rears its head when, as a department, we are confident that we have done enough to warrant an increase in performance. But Umarusi, university professors that manage the process, that they will not allow for an improvement that is beyond 2 or 3% per annum. And our question has always been, what is the empirical basis that one is limited to a 2 to 3% increase year on year? And I know it's a difficult question, simply because the onus then lies on the DBE to be able to provide the empirical data to Umalus to be able to say and justify what the increase should be. But what I want to say, Honorable Chair, is that this kind of tension that exists between the DBE and Umalusi is a healthy tension, because I think it's about protecting and guarding the standard. I mean, we are there to make sure that our learners get recognition for their performance. Umalusi, on the other hand, is there to make sure that the standard of the NSC is not compromised. So I think what is required is that more detailed research, I think Honorable Member has raised the issue of what are the criteria, what are the issues, what is the model, and we need to look at comparability with other countries and how standardization is implemented year on year. And see, the difference lies in the fact that we're a developmental state. We're a developing country. We can't say we've reached stability in terms of our education system. Where there's stability, then one can rely on previous history in terms of performance. But where you're developing and where you're growing, I mean, obviously one has to allow for that scope of variation. Language compensation, Honorable Chair, is also a thorny issue. It's in the sense that in the spirit of redress, one has to attend to the disadvantage that our learners have undergone. Because I don't think you have many countries where almost 70% of your learners are being taught to a language which is their second, sometimes third, and sometimes fourth. So in other words, language is certainly an impediment and a barrier to learner performance. Now, when Umalusi implemented the language compensation, it was on the basis of that disadvantage that learners were presented with. Now, the argument of the DBE is that that disadvantage is still there. I know that the argument of Umalusi will be, well, it's 14 years down the line. But one needs to understand that language acquisition, I mean, is a long-term process. And if one looks at the disadvantage in terms of language, and the fact that we have not, in a sense, decisively addressed the language issues. So the fact that the disadvantage is there simply means that the cohort of 2014 are going to be treated unfairly if one compares them to the cohort of 2013 and 2012 that received the language compensation. And rightfully, in terms of what Umalusi considered, is the stigmatization of learners that are walking around with a certificate that has a language compensation attached to it. But I think the South African public has come to understand that this is about redress, this is about equity. And therefore, both the Minister and Deputy Minister on record as indicating their serious concern about the fact that the language compensation would be withdrawn. And contrary to what the CEO of Umalusi says, the withdrawal of the language compensation will have a serious impact on pathways. So we already are going to start with a pathway that would be possibly 2 to 3% lower than what it was last year, simply because of the withdrawal of this language compensation. So those are the three issues, Chair, that we would like to comment on for now.
The two options have, I thought that it would be as the correct
for is that issue of the knowledge conservation could be tested with the ASPA and one of the two institutions have so very come because like we can't disagree and agree that we differ and disagree forever because that we should find a solution at some point. One question.
I believe in my big voice, so I don't. You know, are these inputs just passed me? I'm from a province whereby all languages are there. Northern Cape is there is the Namibian languages and the Botswana languages and it is in that environment. And this standardization, I asked it because I wanted to understand how perfect it is, how is it being implemented, how authentic are the people now. I see the explanation, they are well educated people, I understand. But the language compensation is not something that is over in our schools. We have a region, Namakwa, which have only one language of teaching, of which learners that are there are African learners. And Namakwa will always be number one. And all the other regions whereby learners are being taught with second language, I mean, yeah, they are being taught with second language because the English is not their mother tongue. And they are African languages. They will never reach that standard because they are still being affected with this language. So I don't know how can my Lucy now say good after 15 or 14 years or what here. Good case promised no more language compensation and the stigma is still there. It is there. We are fighting even in the province on the medium of instruction because nobody wants to yield to other those who are speaking Sikosa don't want to yield to Setswana language, those who are Bambus don't want to be taught. So English is being used to unify the schools and so on. So if I have a concern if really this language compensation is being taken off so quickly like that, what do we call, where is the redress, where is the equity,
I'm not saying that we should conclude to the next year. What I'm saying is that we can reflect on it, but let us not go into detail. The detail will have to come back. Maybe it's one recommendation that we'll have to make, that we should have a meeting that is specifically dedicated to this, so that we are able to even learn more about this. Let's go back and refresh and get further information on this matter. And then during that time when we are gathered, we will be able to properly reflect on this matter. Hearing both views from the department and from Umanu, because for
for now, we can't be really objective. We are going to talk about our own experiences and so forth. But Honorable Lovemore had her hand up. Do you still want to proceed with your point?
I'm quite happy to go with what you're suggesting. If I understand correctly, are you saying that we have another session on this particular issue? I suggest widening it to the language of learning teaching generally. Yes, my question was going to be on what is the empirical evidence for doing away with it? What evidence is there that this can be done away with? But you're quite right that it would be better addressed in a more focused session.
On the first issue with regard to the preparatory or the mock exam and what is the evidence that is now emerging, I think that's an important point, Honorable Chair. The mock exam has just been completed, the tests are being marked, and we will then collate the information and obviously then look at the final outcome in terms of learner performance. But obviously one must understand that the 2014 examination has a number of other impacting factors. And I think Mrs. Dada rightfully indicated that. She calls it the reset here. I like that. In other words, we have changes due to CAPS. And one of those changes would be the maths, the fact that we're moving from three papers to two papers. Economics, we now have two papers. There's been changes across a number of subjects. So the difference in performance cannot be directly attributed to language compensation, but due to the other impeding factors. So what would happen is that we would look at the data, and one also needs to understand that a preparatory exam cannot be equated to the final exam, simply because the preparatory exam is set by provincial departments, so standards vary. The marking is also done by teachers at school. So it will serve as an indicator, a very rough indicator of what the expected performance will be. But that's the data that we will collect, Honorable Chair, and which will be presented to Uma Lucy for further discussion. In terms of what empirical data is currently available to justify the withdrawal, and I think that's the point, Honorable Lovemore, is that we don't have, neither does Uma Lucy nor the DVE has any empirical data which confirms that the system has adequately addressed that disadvantage. Hence the argument from the DVE is that in the absence of that empirical data, our decision may be premature. And therefore, I think the onus is on the Department of Basic Education to make sure that the disadvantage is addressed, and I think that special discussion session, Honorable Chair, is certainly
issues that